Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, the one, the man, the myth, the legend, Joe DeLeon, CBS's Sports Zone. I mean, all I see all over my Twitter feed is Joe DeLeon on CBS. I guess us poor people, I guess we welcome Joe DeLeon into the show.
Okay, man.
Regardless, good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm good. You're the one who turned down going on CBS Sports HQ.
Yeah, it's called responsibilities.
I don't have any. But what I do have is excitement for week zero being here.
It is.
Blake, did you actually know? I don't think college football fans know this.
Okay.
So we think that the week zero slate starts on Saturday.
It technically starts on Friday, correct?
It starts on Thursday. There are FCS games that are being played on Thursday that I will be watching. Okay. My Rhodey Rams play on Friday night, so I will be watching them on Amazon Prime. But I am, of course, just juiced up because there are games with consequences that are actually happening.
I got to be honest with you. This NFL preseason's really pissed me off. I mean, it's just like I've gotten nothing from this preseason whatsoever. Starters aren't playing at all. Maybe a series. I mean, outside of Hard Knocks, I'm not really watching anything NFL-wise, which I don't really do anyway. I've mainly focused on college. But if there's college ball being played, I will be watching. You best believe that. But it is week zero. We have finally, we have made it. We'll be talking about all of those games this week and week one ever so quickly approaching. We got lots that we need to discuss here tonight. Keelan Russell has won the quarterback battle at Alabama. We will get to that. Some more fall camp intel. We'll go up to Columbus, Ohio, and talk some camp and ball surrounding Ohio State. Baylor versus Auburn. And if we have time, we'll get to Oregon and Boise. But tonight, we got to start off the show as Cleveland Brown tight end Daquan Wright has been waived by the Cleveland Browns, as everybody is waiting if Daquan Wright is going to be claimed off of waivers. Joe, I know that Matt Zenitz and myself have been reporting this for a couple of days now, but it is coming into fruition. Daquan Wright has also agreed to a deal with Louisiana State University. This has a lot of people up in arms, a lot of people pissed off. I'm just going to go ahead and start off this. You are warned if you watch this show. I told you for 6 days now that this was going down, and you're just surprised now. But, Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you first. What are your thoughts about Daquan Wright, who has been cut from the Cleveland Browns? Todd Monken said yesterday that Lane Kiffin called him last week and tried to tell him what was happening, and he didn't even answer the phone nor give him the courtesy of calling him back. What are your thoughts about all of this situation and going down?
Look, I get why people are upset, and we had this discussion when you broke the news on Wednesday on the Wednesday show. So I'm rehashing the comments that we had. I get why people are upset. A guy that suited up and played in professional games, preseason games, but suited up for a pro team is returning to college. And that feels really, it feels gross. It really does. But Blake, I can't fault the kid. I can't fault LSU when there was a court ruling that allowed for his eligibility for him to be able to return to football. This is nothing like the Cole Huston situation. It's nothing like the Stephen Daly situation, who's actually now no longer eligible from.
Yeah, he's got a suit. Which, hold on, time out, pause. I would expect lawsuits to be started to file Monday morning in the state of Indiana. Sorry to interrupt you. Continue. But it's coming. It's
an important layer. Yeah, all these guys are going to start suing in order to get their ability to play. And I know that the argument that I'm making here that it's not his fault that this court case went through, some people might point to the commentary that we had on Brendan Sorsby. These are so freaking different, it's not even funny. So I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole. At the end of the day, Blake, the guy has the opportunity to make money. He wasn't going to stick on this Browns roster. He wouldn't have fit in the tight end room. He probably would not have been on anything more than a practice squad, and he would have had to go on and compete for an NFL roster next preseason, or maybe compete in the UFL if he wanted to make that pro journey happen. It wasn't a realistic path for him to make the league. So if that wasn't available to him and he wants to keep playing, and a NCAA eligibility rule change and then a lawsuit allows for him to return to college football, why is it such a grand issue that the kid wants to play and LSU is willing to take him on? It is not out of the rights of him to take advantage of this opportunity that is in front of him. But the one thing I will say before, I know that you have much deeper thoughts on this because it's directly tied to LSU. The only thing that does irk me with this is that Wright is going to pay back his signing bonus. He's going to pay back anything that affects his amateurism in this ordeal.
Yeah.
It's really messed up that Arian Carter is suspended for basically the same exact thing, but a different timeline. So I'm just floating that out there. It really sucks that Wright gets to return and Arian Carter is getting the brunt of this.
Well, then sue. These kids did.
That's a good point.
I mean, I don't have any to sue them. Now, let me throw this your way. Everybody is pissed off about this Daquan Wright ruling. And for that, I completely understand why they are pissed off. But let me ask you a question. The NCAA said that they were not going to enact, which some of you need to get a dictionary to read what the word enact is. It's putting something into law or rule. They said for the 5-for-5 rule that was coming down for the Protect College Sports Act, the NCAA stated that they are not going to allow this to go on and they're going to pass it until the draft is over so that the 2022 class would not have the ability to exit the draft or go to a pro team. Joe, this just happened after the draft. This happened 3 weeks ago. So they literally came up with a 5-for-5 ruling for the 2022 class and said that the 2023 class doesn't have one more year, that the 2023 class has two more years. So when they stated that, they're basically also stating that the 2022 class should have been allowed to be a part of the 5-for-5. Let me give you a scenario. Joe, name a senior on any team in the country. Tell me a senior right now. Just off the top of your head, name a senior. Okay, John Mateer. John Mateer does not have one more year. John Mateer technically has two more years. So the NCAA tried to pull a fast one. Does he not? If he was a part I'm throwing out a random senior. So if you were a part of the 2023 class, Whit Weeks is a guy from LSU, you have two more years. The NCAA tried to pull a fast one, and they missed. And then
Mateer doesn't fit, by the way, but continue.
Is he in the 2023 class?
He was a 2022 kid. But okay. Your point still stands.
Name a senior that was a problem. Name a senior that was in the 2023 class, and then now they have more than 1 year. This is not their final year. They get another year. That is how this is working. So when you did not allow the 2022 class to be enacted in what your ruling came down on, you did not allow them to be there. So you can be mad. You know what the NCAA was advised by every conference? Wait until the season starts to enact this so that nobody comes back and tries to sue to get back in college. And they said, they won't do that. They won't do it. Why? They want to be a professional football players anyway. They won't do it. Now look what happened. So now you're blaming Daquan Wright for the NCAA stupidity. You have a politician that is running the NCAA who doesn't understand sports. He doesn't understand it. I'm sorry to tell everybody, he doesn't get it. Now, in reference to Daquan Wright, can I ask another question? Are you mad about Trinidad Chambliss? Are you mad about Lewis Murphy? Because both of them were deep in the playoffs last year, and Lewis Murphy was a 7-year guy. But you're mad at Daquan Wright? So when Lewis Murphy caught an interception in the playoff last year, were you mad? When he broke up a pass against Miami to make sure that Indiana stayed on path on winning a national title. Will you, Matt? You know what I didn't see on Twitter? I didn't see people typing, Lewis Murphy should be at a job or in the NFL. I never saw any of you tweeting with your little magic fingers that he shouldn't have been there. There was no evidence that was supported on the Trinidad Chambliss case that he had tonsillitis. Zero. The judge asked for an autograph at the end of the hearing. And now you're going to be mad at this situation. Why? Because it's Lane? Because he was on an NFL team? Okay, sounds good. But at the same time, there have been multiple eligibility cases that have gone through a state court that have been, quite honestly, ridiculous. So I don't really want to hear about a seven-year guy catching an interception in a national championship game and making a tackle in a national championship game when he's 24 years old. I don't want to hear it. So until rules are enacted, why are you mad that rules are being perverted? Now, you can say, well, Blake's being a homer because it's LSU. LSU wasn't the first team to add a player. I can look at Auburn. Why are you mad at that? LSU was not the first team to add a player. So, again, I just bring this up, Joe, to say that the NCAA should have waited, and you're mad because they got pushed in the locker. You want to know why? They've given 24/7 ESPN and On3 no comments to all major three outlets because they have no idea what to do. They were told not to do this until the season started, and yet here we stand.
So I think that there's two parts to this that there's very true here. That the outrage, I mean, it could not have been a more perfect circumstance for everybody to get upset. It's Lane Kiffin. It's LSU. They added Junior, the defensive lineman from Notre Dame as well. Mm-hmm. Naturally, because it's Lane.
His name all week. Do you want me to say his last name?
Okay.
Tuli Halimaka.
Tuli Halimaka.
Tuli Halimaka.
See, I just said it off the top of my head, and I think I got it more right than you did.
Probably.
The point is that because it's Lane Kiffin, automatically there's increased outrage. Because he suited up for a pro team, there is even more increased outrage. I don't think enough people are taking enough time to like sit back and evaluate the whole entire situation. And I think that you said this, correctly, where this isn't Daquan Wright's fault. This is also not Lane Kiffin's fault. This is the NCAA's fault for deciding that they were going to change the eligibility rules, and they waited to do it at the worst possible time. They did it with enough of a window for somebody to sue for 2022 athletes that weren't suited up and playing in pro sports, that they could find ways to return. And there have been guys, Stephen Daly was one of them because he did not have a pro opportunity. And then it opened the door for the guys that had signed pro contracts that were a part of preseason activities to be able to consider coming back. What's the difference between Daquan Wright and Stephen Daly? A couple of weeks difference and a paycheck.
One guy was good enough to go to the NFL and the other wasn't.
Well, and one guy was Stephen Daly was hurt that impacted his possibility to make it to the NFL.
So was Daquan Wright. Right, Daquan Wright suited up and was injured because they made him to, by the way. Daquan Wright per Todd Monken did not play in the game because he was hurt, and they forced him to suit up, by the way. That's per Todd Monken. So, again, Joe, why didn't everybody outrage versus Indiana with seven-year guys?
Right. So, but what I'm getting at here is that this is everything to come down with the NCAA doing what it's done a lot recently, is it takes an action. It doesn't even think to consider the possible ramifications that come from it. Their inability to evaluate situations and understand what could go wrong, it's terrible. It's the worst that it's ever been. The NCAA used to have so much power, and it feels like there's still hubris lingering from whenever they could just do whatever they wanted and unveil punishments at extreme levels, and everybody had to just adhere to it. We could sit here and say that the sport is broken. It's the same just simple take that everybody provides when crazy stuff like this happens. A lot does obviously need to change. But one other example that I'd point to that isn't identical but isn't far off, guys in the NBA can get drafted from college, and those college guys can decide to return to college basketball if they choose that they're not happy with where they were picked or how late they ended up getting picked, right, as long as they don't sign with an agent. understandably, right in this circumstance, was signed with an agent. He did end up getting paid. He did end up getting suited up. He did end up suiting up for an NFL team. But what I'm getting at here is that similar things occur in other sports before this whole eligibility thing happened. So why does nobody care when it happens closely, not identically, but closely to the NBA draft, but Wright, who wasn't even going to make this team, decides he wants to take one more shot at playing college football to see if he can boost his draft stock and make a little bit more money? Why is he the ultimate villain in this situation?
Well, and he didn't start this. Here's the biggest lie in all of this. LSU and Daquan Wright did not start this. A Colorado court system did.
Right.
A Colorado court system deemed that the NCAA was, and I'm quoting, using malfeasance. That is malfeasance for not allowing the 2022 class. Then it got overruled. Now these guys have to come back. Nobody started this outside of a 2022 argument than a Colorado court case that deemed them so to be eligible. So as soon as these players in the 2022 class were eligible, what did you think was going to happen? What in the good wide world did you think was going to happen? I don't see anybody freaking out about the basketball player that just signed with Kentucky. What's the problem? I mean, Joe, there are double standards to what you're trying to say. There are double standards to what is going on. Oh, well, this guy didn't play, and this guy went into an NFL minicamp. And what's your point? Lewis Murphy was 24 years of age. Trinidad Chambliss had a judge that asked for an autograph at the end of a hearing.
The other thing, I know you're right. There was very little. There really, honestly, actually, is insane. Months later, there was no outrage. There wasn't. Everyone was just like, "Oh, cool, Trinidad Chambliss gets to play football for another year." Everybody kind of
no outrage.
Moved on. Blake, the whole thing is quite honestly tiring. This whole entire thing is tiring. I know that like we could keep reverting it back to everything, but. Holy hell, the Protect College Sports Act needs to go through that so we don't have to sit here and have these conversations so that there isn't even the possibility for a lawsuit like this to have happened. But, like, at the end of the day, forget the lawsuit for 2 seconds. The rules were changed. The rules were changed to allow for 5 for 5. Why was the 2022 class not allowed to be a part of this in the first place? If they had the foresight for understanding what was going to come of this, they should have done it immediately after the season. I don't know when they first started talking about this. I do recall that we started talking about it early on in this. I believe it was early on in the summer, but It was well before the preseason started. They should have enacted and pushed this rule through earlier, or they should have freaking waited. The NCAA is responsible for this mess. We can't sit here and say that the system is broken, yell at Daquan Wright, yell at Lane Kiffin, when the NCAA is the one that created this situation.
Well, and I can make the argument with Trey Dez Green that Daly and the other young man that went back to Indiana is going to have a bigger impact than Daquan Wright.
He's junior play.
Truly, junior
Tui Alamaka.
Tui Alamaka is not going to start.
That's the other way. That last thing with this, people are acting as if like Jaden Daniels is suiting up for LSU.
I don't think almost like wants to suit up for LSU.
That's a bad example. Malik Nabers. They're acting like Malik Nabers is coming back to suit up for LSU. And dude, he's a backup player. And the other thing we mentioned this last week, this is nothing like the Charles Bediako situation where Bediako was multiple years removed and had spent regular season time with a G League team. It's very different. This is not the same exact thing. A rule changed. The kid had the opportunity to pursue a return to college athletics. Is it, like you said, is it perverted? Yeah, it's freaking perverted. The rules have been perverted. They have been destroyed, spit on, spat out in every possible way. It's a freaking mess. But there's a path for the kid to get to play football this season in a contributing role as the probably the third tight end in this offense. He probably, with how long it's going to take to get him reacclimated to the roster. I was reading an article today. I think it was Hummer who I was reading. It was highlighting everything, him speaking to coaches and general managers of like how hard it is to get guys reacclimated and reinvolved in the football program. There's a chance that he doesn't even see snaps until midway through the year. So again, we're getting pissed off over like the littlest things.
I would bet that he sees snaps by week two.
Do you think that it's going to be that easy for him to get caught up with everything?
What does he need to get caught up with? That was my question to everybody. He knows the offense. He's already taken a – I mean, I'm assuming he's going to take a physical and he's going to be enrolled. Classes start tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true.
I guess we'll find out. All right, let's get rolling here. Everyone, do us a favor by hitting the like and share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, by using that YouTube link, do us a favor. Hit that subscribe button down below. I'm sure Xander, who's really mad at me in the chat right now, is going to hit the unsubscribe button. But don't be like Xander. Hit the subscribe button and notification bell wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. We need to talk about our friends and partners the entire 2026 college football season, our good friends over at Kalshi. Guys, who's going to win the national title? Who's going to win your favorite conference? On Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform, you could trade those predictions in a live market. On Kalshi, you're trading against your peers in a live market, meaning that there is no house. And as those probabilities changes, you can buy in and out of your position. Trade the draft pick, the game, and much more on Kalshi by using the promo code RJS to get $10 in bonus credits when you trade up to $10. You must be 18 years or older to join. Restrictions and eligibility requirements do apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. For more information, go over to kalshi.com/regulatory for more details. All right, Joe, let's get to some more football.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Didn't think that you and I would be getting to this in week one or week zero of college football, talking about eligibility cases, but here we are. Joe, it's been announced and reported over the last couple of days. Matt Zenitz over at 24/7 Sports and CBS is reporting that Keelan Russell has been announced as Alabama's starting quarterback, something that you and I have been monitoring very closely. What are your thoughts of Keelan Russell being announced and becoming the starter at the University of Alabama this season?
Yeah, man, I think that this was just such an obvious choice. I know that we spent every single week when we would talk about this, like really digging into the details on who held pole position in this race between him and Austin Mack. And it all came down to the fact that Keelan Russell provides a significantly higher ceiling for this offense for this upcoming year. And also for the next couple of years, presumably for maybe two more after this season as Alabama's starting quarterback. The kid's extremely gifted. Andrew Ivins gushed over him when we had him on last week to talk about some of the notable players in college football. And the comps to Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, they're all there. But most importantly, the kid has been incredibly accurate throughout his career. He has been a state champion twice. He has exactly what I think Alabama needs right now in this new version of Kalen DeBoer's program. He finally has, this is something that we've talked about, he finally has this team built in his mold. There's very few holdovers from the Nick Saban staff. It has been all of multiple classes of recruiting coming up and developing and growing with this team. And we now get to see what that vision truly looks like. This team is actually only bringing in 30% of its offensive snaps from a year ago. So it's going to look like a completely new offensive, just an entirely new offense. Starting fresh with a quarterback that has the upside to activate all the new weapons at receiver, the dynamic players at running back like EJ Crowell, it makes the most sense. I liken this to the Notre Dame, CJ Carr, Kenny Michie battle, and I just want to reiterate that for a second. I don't think that this is an indictment on Austin Mack, because it sounds like Austin Mack was tremendous during all of this and that his teammates loved him, just like Kenny Michie was lauded for how impactful for how he was in that Notre Dame locker room. And that earned him an opportunity to go be the starting quarterback at an SEC program, and it feels like the same exact thing is going to happen for Austin Mack. I'm just juiced up that this is now official. I'm glad that Kalen DeBoer did not waste any time and chose not to let this thing bleed into the first game of the season with their first game against Eastern Carolina. I'm juiced up, man. Keelan Russell's super gifted. This is going to be fun.
Okay. So there isn't one thing that I disagree with you on. You know, what was it, Joe? 2 years ago, my brother and I for AYS made our ways to Duncanville, Texas. And we're doing a commitment there. Kid was committing to LSU. And meeting some of the coaching staff, one of them walked up to me and says, "Hey, this is Keelan Russell. This young man might be arguably the guy that's not talked about the most, but might be the most overall talented because of the position he plays." So then all of a sudden, Keelan Russell becomes the number one overall quarterback in the class. And I get a text message that said, "Told you." This has been coming for quite some time, that this young man is special and has special abilities. He will continue, and he's going to show those special abilities in certain situations this year. However, did you read the reports from Zenitz and Hummer about how the reason that this is coming about? Yes, Keelan Russell is extremely talented. He has a massive arm. He's a great runner. And Joe, here's the real truth that we should be talking about here. He is going to 1,000% help their run game. 100% is going to transform their run game with a struggling offensive line because of how he can get out of the pocket, how he can be dynamic inside the pocket and outside the pocket. But one thing keeps coming up here that I keep asking the question, why does everybody keep saying sources are telling me that this might be a little bit more out of necessity? That because of the offensive line struggles, Keelan possesses more of a playmaker role and can run away and get out of these pressures than potentially Austin Mack. I don't know, Joe, if I'm reading too much into this, but I went back and was listening and watching and reading some of the stuff over at Bama 24/7. And Joe, the offensive line had a day again where they struggled and where Keelan Russell's having to make plays outside the pocket yet again in another scrimmage. So I ask a question. Can two things be true at once? Can this young man have the potential of being a number one overall pick, one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in college football with a massive arm that's deadly accurate, that's just hella athletic, as I guess the kids still say hella. I don't know if they do or not. But can it also be a case where you're going to have to make him play because the offensive line, at least as of right now, continues to struggle? So there are two ways that I personally attack this. I think the kid's going to be really good. I think he makes Alabama very dangerous. I think now that he is the starter and what his ability and what he possesses inside of his ability, Joe, this is a team that if you let him loose and you do not contain him, that if this wide receiver room gets rolling, God forbid they find a run game, Joe, they're going to be dangerous and he can be dangerous. But I come back to the second part of that. Is he going to have to literally put this team on his back in moments and times because this offensive line struggles? And can they provide what every young quarterback needs, which is a strong running game? Now, I end this by saying, let's talk about some of the quarterbacks that we think all that can be number one overall draft picks that came back this year. Whether you think it's Arch, Dante Moore, Lenora Sellers, for crying out loud, what did they all not have a year ago and why they struggled? If you can't provide a first-time starting quarterback in the SEC a run game, there will be moments and times that he will struggle. Ty Simpson had to be Superman for you and still led you to a playoff. So, Joe, for me, there are two sides of this that both can be true at the same time. But I just think this kid is very good, very athletic, very talented, and he's going to do some special stuff.
My problem with the commentary about the offensive line stuff is last season your offensive line.
Do you think it doesn't give him enough credit? Do you think it doesn't give him? Like,
no, I'm mostly rejecting it because I just don't think it's as big of an issue as you're trying to make it out to be because, and I've said this a lot of times when we've talked about Alabama, their offensive line last year wasn't good. It wasn't. It got boosted a little bit statistically because Ty Simpson was really good at evading pressure and getting away from heat and getting the ball out. If it wasn't for that, statistically, they would have been one of the worst offensive lines in the country, in the SEC. They couldn't run the ball for a reason. And there were a lot of games where I remember us hyping up Ty Simpson going, wow, that was a really great throw. And it was partly because he had pressure in his face. I didn't think Caden Proctor was very good last year. I didn't think Parker Brailsford was that great either. I didn't think any of the bodies really made much sense. You had a gigantic tackle. You had a tiny center. It just didn't have much continuity. When you're building an offensive line, you need to pick one way or another. Do you want guys that are quick that can move in space, or do you want gigantic bodies so that you can maul opposing defensive lines? And I think a lot of that lack of an established vision for the offensive line, because they had dudes from Saban that were still there from the old philosophy, and they're trying to build this new unit under what DeBoer is trying to build, that created this untenable O-line unit that just wasn't going to work. So I'm saying this to say, if they were as mediocre as they were last year, how much worse can they possibly be this year? I'm not saying that they had the 135th best offensive line in college football. That's not true. They had a guy who went in the first round. Parker Brailsford could eventually become the starting center for the Browns. My point is though, that they have two highly recruited kids in Carroll and Lloyd, and a couple of solid additions that they had in the transfer portal that could theoretically make this offensive line better. And I take it a step further that, yeah, if there is some belief that they can't really survive with the offensive line, that they need someone who's more dynamic to escape that stuff, it's not going to be far different from what happened with Ty Simpson last year. And I trust Keelan Russell to be more creative with his legs than Ty Simpson. He's 10 times the athlete of what Ty Simpson was at Alabama last year. So as much as you might have those fears, I don't think it's going to be anywhere as visible of a problem as it was last year. I think at the very worst, it'll just be the same. And Keelan Russell is going to be elusive, and he's going to make a lot more plays with his legs that Ty Simpson didn't typically make.
There's one massive issue with what you just said. You ready?
Okay.
He's a first-time starter. He's a second-year player. Ty Simpson had been there for 5 years. Joe, I don't care what you tell me. There will be times this season because of the pressure where he can't escape and a defense can contain him, and he's going to be in trouble because of this offensive line. It's coming. Because it's not the fact that we think that they could be better. It's the fact that you have sources telling 24/7 sports on a national level, we have to do this because he's making more plays as our offensive line breaks down. That is the report. So regardless if what we want to say about it, even if I think, okay, here's a hot take. You ready? Boy, this is going to get clipped. He has the potential to be a Heisman Trophy candidate this year. He has that level of ability. Right? Like, I don't think you disagree. I don't think if you look up at the in December and Keelan Russell has led them to a playoff and has gone off, I don't think any one of us would be shocked by a former number one quarterback coming out would be there. I guess I need to see how he deals with some of these teams that are going to be able to contain him. And can this wide receiver room, too, take a next step, which, by the way, if you look into any of the fall camp intel coming out of Bama, it seems like this wide receiver room is doing a lot of elite stuff. And if that is the case, I have a lot of confidence in them. They're going to be fun. I just, again, I'm going to continue to worry about that offensive line. I'm going to worry about a starting quarterback. I mean, like, I feel like, can I tell you what I feel like? He is more athletic than Arch. We all know that. But at the same time, I've seen first-time starting quarterbacks that are highly athletic that have bad offensive line play really struggle. We've seen it. It wouldn't be the first time that this has happened. I just hope that this offensive line can be a lot better for him than what we saw a season ago. That's all I'm saying, because I do think he's ultra talented. And here's the truth. His upside is bigger than Ty Simpson's, and I don't think that that's very hot take-ish.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. I'm just – look, with the concerns of the O-line stuff, as I said with my opening bit on this, the kid's highlights were fun in high school. He put up insane numbers. He had 55 touchdowns with 4 picks his senior year. The kid has some ridiculous tools, and Lamar Jackson was so fun to watch. Jaden Daniels was so fun to watch. I am glad that he's going to get on the field and that there haven't been any bumps. It would have been a problem if former 5-star kid got beat out and had to sit another year, but that's not the case. The kid's born to, I think, be great. I'm excited for what's going to.
Yeah, he's good. Look, he is going to be a problem for every team that they face. Yeah. A very massive problem. Just give him a couple more seconds. Just give him a couple more seconds. That's all I ask. Yeah, all right, let's move forward here. Speaking of fall camp intel, Joe, we're going around the country continuing to talk about things that are coming out of fall camp. Boy, there's been a lot coming out of Columbus, Ohio over the last couple of days. Let's go out to Columbus, Ohio. Joe, what are you hearing, seeing, thinking, reading about what is coming out of Columbus and potentially some of these younger guys and older guys making statements as fall camp starts wrapping up?
Yeah, so I went on over to Buck Nuts to get caught up with everything that's been happening and how the depth chart is shaking out. And there were two transfers that caught my attention with how this depth chart is looking right now. Christian Allegro, the transfer from Wisconsin, who's stepping in, gigantic kid. He's 6'4". He's pretty versatile. He's played some edge. He's played some off-ball linebacker. It sounds like he could be carving out somewhat of a role similar to what we got with Arvell Reese. Now, he's not the same level of crazy, twitchy athlete as Arvell Reese, but I feel as though that he can be a real strong piece for a linebacker unit that is starting fresh after losing Reese and Sonny Styles to the NFL. I trust what Patricia can cook up when he has big, physical athletes that can provide multiple roles. I trust Patricia to be able to get the most out of those players. On the offensive side of the ball, Devin McQuinn has seemingly been constantly building since the spring up until this point and has established himself as the clear starting Z coming over from UTSA. I feel like we spent a lot of time getting super hyped up on Chris Henry Jr. and Brock Boyd, but Devin McQuinn could be that Jameson Williams, although Jameson Williams was the other way around, forget that. He could be that type of guy that comes into this offense that transfers over that doesn't fit the typical mold of a former 4-star, 5-star kid that becomes a superstar. If his production ends up being great this year, he could be one of the more unheralded wide receivers in the country. And I think that it seems as though that Chris Henry is probably not going to have the type of role that we are anticipating, because it sounds like they're just having him play backup X. It doesn't seem like that there's been any effort to work him in at Z. His physical profile doesn't really fit a Z. So McQuinn's emergence is exciting, that they don't have to force a freshman into a role that he may not be ready for. What?
3-star kids making moves at wide receivers. It's the Cortez Hankton special. Not playing 5-star kids. It's the Cortez Hankton special. I'm gonna need to see outside of Jeremiah Smith this room take a leap with him. Sorry. Seeing it up close and personal. With that being said, Joe, the big thing talking to some guys over at Bucknuts that I think for me that is standing out is, and I quote here, sources telling people over at Bucknuts the outright war that is happening on both lines of scrimmage. I felt like a year ago when we were talking about fall camp coming out of what is happening. Now, the defensive line for Ohio State was really good, right? Like, was really good. Was that they're getting absolutely abused. Now, there's a lot of pushback from this offense. Coming out of the scrimmage, the second scrimmage, defense start off early, and then all of a sudden Julian Sain takes over, which completely fits my agenda of being back on the Julian Sain bandwagon. It is going to take them a minute, in my opinion, with a new offensive coordinator to hit the full strides that they need to hit. And I expect them to get there. Why am I not surprised that Joe, a second-year starting quarterback under Ryan Day, is, yes, things starting off slow, and then he's making first overall pick level throws, and he's like, enough is enough. We're getting rolling. Like, hey, hey, Arthur, we're about to get rolling. Pick this thing up. Joe, I kind of got a chill down my spine thinking that this kid might be ready. Like, there were times and moments last year where I'm like, okay, he should have hit Ennis on the drag here. He should have throw the comeback there. He should have stepped up in the pocket there. But all I keep hearing is the kid's put on size. He's taken a very massive leap this offseason. And coming out of camp, they start off slow. And Julian Sain says, I've had enough. It's time to go to work. And this offensive line, who is needed to develop and get better, quotes from Bucknuts over 24/7 that there's an outright war going on in the line of scrimmage. It's what you want to hear from national title contenders. Want to know why Ohio State's number one overall? That's why. So I really love what I am hearing coming out of there. I do think there's going to take some chemistry. You talked about some of the guys coming up. Jalen McClain is a guy that I think that we might need to keep our eyes on, who's kind of taking over in that role from Caleb Downs. Can this safety room really emerge after losing probably the best safety in the country will be a question. But I really do like hearing I really like hearing that both lines of scrimmage are really going after it in camp. As Joe, here's the truth. There is no more fall camp. Coaches are going to start ramping down on a lot of things, making sure guys don't get injured from the beginning game of the prep, season. Man. Yeah, game prep. You're in it. So that's what you really want to hear coming out of camp in the final week.
Other thing, too, I was really intrigued by notes on the secondary. Jay Timmons, freshman, seems like he's had a really hot camp starting at nickel. He wasn't even one of the big-name up-and-coming guys in this 2026 recruiting class that was even getting mentioned. So, like, I remember when I was reading this article earlier and I spotted his name, I had to like kind of go dig. I'm like, Jay Timmons, like he wasn't one of the premier names in this recruiting class. It's always cool when there's that maybe lesser known prospect that gets onto the field pretty early for a team that's as good as Ohio State. But the one quote that really stuck out to me is that there is a strong belief in the building that Jermaine Matthews and Devin Sanchez can be one of the best cornerback duos in the country. This corner room has been really experienced over the past couple of years, and losing key starters and having Devin Sanchez thrust into a starting role was not a concern, but it was something to watch for Ohio State. And one of the things that I've said this entire time, every time I've been asked about Ohio State, is that I really think that Devin Sanchez is going to grow into a superstar, that he is going to just be unbelievably good. And we'll be talking about him at a Brandon Finney, Leonard Moore type of a level where he's just unreal, extremely gifted. He's shut down. Nobody can complete any passes on him. Jermaine Matthews has always been a steady outside corner for Ohio State when he has contributed and been in the lineup. Sanchez is, I think, where this goes over the top, because that dude has some unreal shutdown corner traits that we're about to get exposure to. If that part of things lives up to its potential, then this defense realistically should not have much of a drop-off. If they do, it'll be early, but as I've kind of discussed, I think by the middle of the year, their defense is going to be full stride with all these new faces once they get comfortable.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, that secondary, you bring in Terry Moore, Jalen McClain returns for a third year as a junior. You have Devin Sanchez, who's one of the top DBs coming out in his class. How do you rebuild this front seven? Do you reload, you know, to a lot of extent, because you still have a lot of talented guys? Will Smith is still there. Ross Al, you brought in from the portal. You brought in a lot of very talented freshmen. So defensively will be a question. I do think the secondary outside of Devin Sanchez is a question mark for me. Jalen McClain, is the buzz coming out about him at that other safety spot? Is that legit? You know, I mean, Joe, are they going to utilize that role in this defense a lot like they did with Caleb Downs, or is it going to be more traditional? It's going to be really interesting to see. But I'm really intrigued by Sanchez, Earl Little Jr., you know, like all of these guys that will be there that are starting to emerge. The last thing I'd say, too, in the scrimmage, they kind of let some guys have some days off, like wanted to really manage workload. Mm-hmm. Of course they did. I mean, what did you expect? I mean, if Ohio State is going to make a run that everybody thinks that they can make, guys, you're going to be hearing some of these scrimmages. I mean, there's a chance and potential that Ohio State plays 16 games this year. So, yeah, they're going to take a lot of workload. I saw a lot of people on Bucknuts talking about, you know, what do you mean by workload? Yeah, they might play 16 games. That's why. You know, like, I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, we'll see how things emerge. I'm really starting to buy in on what I'm hearing from Julian saying, and if that is going to be the case, then okay, then he can lead this team deep into the playoff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A lot of exciting things coming out of absolutely. Ohio State.
All right. I think we're going to punt on Oregon and Boise, depending on how this goes.
Yeah.
Baylor versus Auburn, take two, as it happened last season. Joe, obviously – Baylor getting a big-time quarterback out of the transfer portal in DJ Lagway. I'm sure a lot of eyeballs will be on this game to see how he performs. Auburn with a brand-new offensive staff, returning a lot of pieces on the defense, kind of a lot like, in some ways, LSU, but, you know, no one really talked about that part. With that being said, what do you project in Baylor versus Auburn? How do you see this game going down?
So Auburn has a 73% chance of winning over at Kalshi, so pretty strong in favor of the Tigers. Looking at these two teams, I lean pretty heavily in favor of Auburn winning this game. Auburn has a more solid roster than I think a lot of people realize. They've got an underrated defensive line with Deshaun Womack and Cody Siegler on this D-line. I really like the running back tandem with Jeremiah Cobb and Bryson Washington. But I really think that Byron Brown is set to have a really great season this year leading this Auburn offense. And this is an early opportunity for him going up against a Baylor team that has really struggled to find its defensive identity, ironically, under Dave Aranda over the past couple of years. Real good chance for Brown to pop off, explode with the first big game, and for us to get hyped up about Auburn before they end up actually playing a really competitive team in the SEC. This Auburn team has a lot of experience. 10th in snaps played. They're 8 in offensive snaps, 31st in defensive snaps. They're 2nd in overall balance on offense, which is huge. We're not just talking about like one position group that's carrying the weight. Like the running back room is 1st in the country in running back snaps. They have a lot of balance across the board, meaning they're going to be able to put up a ton of points. Baylor, on the other hand, is a bit of an enigma. But we kind of know what Baylor is. Dave Aranda was a sitting duck if it wasn't for the whole AD situation that happened last year for this program. He would have been fired. They let him come back for whatever reason. Their defense was gutted. They had 16 players that had 200 snaps on offense. Only 3 guys return is also an issue. They are a team that had some solid pieces, and many of them are gone. The one saving grace for Baylor going into this game and going into this year. Ryan Roberts had reported in a piece that he did with A to Z Sports when speaking to some NFL scouts, and I was talking to Ryan about this. Apparently, DJ Lagway has looked really good during camp. One of the scouts that he spoke to showed up expecting that he was going to hate watching DJ Lagway, was expecting to be disappointed, and he left being blown away, that he felt more decisive, that he seemed more accurate. He is going to be the type of guy that looks really good in a practice setting. How does this translate on a field against a really good team in Auburn, or not a really good team, but a competitive team in Auburn, when your team doesn't really have the continuity that you would like going into the first game of the season? I heavily lean Auburn for this matchup, Blake, but I wouldn't be surprised if DJ Lagway kept him in it.
Yeah. I don't know how to start this off because he's looking good against Holmes.
I think there's things that you can derive outside of just who his competition is. I don't think that – I think considering the big qualifier of the comment from Ryan and the scout that he spoke to that stuck with me is it's not like he showed up and he was a DJ Lagway lover and he was like hoping that he would look good and he was giddy that he showed that he did a couple of nice things. He's a guy that wasn't expecting to like DJ Lagway. And he came away really liking DJ Lagway. I think that that's kind of telling.
Jackson Arnold last season ran for 137 yards and two touchdowns on this Baylor defense. He threw, he completed 11 of his 17 passes. So he wasn't really needed to throw the ball. My question is he going up against bad competition in practice, knowing he won't get hit? And when he faces an SEC defense, again, does he throw five picks? Because I think he's got all of the tools, and he is gifted. But, Joe, he has been injury-prone. And I do wonder if he can put it all together. I really do think that he can put it all together. I'm not saying that he can't put it all together. But here is my thing. This Auburn defense a season ago was nasty. DJ Durkin returns. There's one guy on the defense. I don't know. Maybe I missed it. Debo Atkins returns. I mean, this front seven is disgusting. Their secondary, it was very underrated. This was a team a year ago that offensively everybody knows why Hugh Freeze got fired. And then when he gets fired, they turn around and they score 35, 38, and 45 points and have Alabama on the ropes at the end of the year. I mean, you put two and two together. I do believe that this defense for Auburn is going to fly to the football and cause a lot of chaos. Now, what I do wonder is a season ago with some of the philosophies at Baylor, Sawyer Robertson did throw for 419 and three touchdowns. And I do wonder in a more spread out offense that is going to benefit DJ Lagway to get the ball out quickly, to get the ball out in space and let receivers make plays. If that doesn't overall benefit his skill set, and why I do agree with you, there is 1,000% a chance that he can keep them involved in this game a lot like a season ago and could keep them into this because he is going to spend the ball to a lot of guys and a lot of open space. I just think when it comes down to it, this Auburn front seven is going to get after him. And Joe, when he starts getting hit in the pocket, he starts making bad mistakes. I'm going to have to see DJ Lagway overcome that. I'm going to have to see DJ Lagway start making drive after drive, pass after pass, the right decisions over and over again. Joe, maybe Billy Napier just flat out sucks. There's a strong possibility as an offensive play caller, Billy Napier stinks. And maybe in a new offense, he's able to do it. I just think that this defense is going to strive. Now, Alex Golish is a really good freaking play caller. Alex Golish has learned and knows how to put up points. And I just don't think this Baylor defense has enough to slow them down. Joe, I think that this is a double-digit game. I think Auburn's going to be able to put up a lot of points on them. Even if I think DJ is going to be able to do some good things, I just think that not having to go a far long way for Auburn, they're going to be able to – maybe it's close early, but I think over time Auburn's going to be able to get to him, and it's just not going to be enough for Baylor.
I got to be honest with you. I don't think this game's going to be close. I think that this is going to be an – I'm just going to be straight with that. This is going to be an ass-whooping. Dude, so you brought up last year's game, and I'm not – we should never, ever, 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 ever purely just say, well, Auburn beat Baylor last year, so therefore Auburn beats Baylor.
Do you remember what we were talking about with Jackson Arnold at the end of that game?
So, but this is my point. I am using last year's game, 38-24 was the final score. I'm using this to depict the separation of the talent,
right,
of a middle of the pack Big 12 team and an SEC team.
That game,
yes, that game. Well, so that this is the whole point. Auburn was terrible last year. Auburn was not good. The minute that they started playing SEC teams, they couldn't move the ball. They scored 38 points on them. And they couldn't move the ball the entire year. Jackson Arnold was awful. He had 17 pass attempts in this game. He ran for 137. You know who's a better quarterback and a better athlete than Jackson Arnold by a mile? Byron freaking Brown. You know what running back tandem is dynamic and explosive? And one of these freaking guys was in your running back room a year ago? Auburn's, who has Bryson Washington and Jeremiah Cobb. I think this couldn't be any more of a no-brainer. Baylor's going to get trounced. I think what's definitely possible is Sawyer Robertson had 400 yards last year. Again, we're not like directly comparing. I think DJ Lagway can have a good game, but the rest of this Baylor team doesn't scare me one bit.
No, it shouldn't. And again, if you want to remember last season, this Oklahoma team was on the ropes. If Jackson Arnold can hit a pass to Cam Coleman, they're going to blow out Oklahoma. I mean, they're going to blow them out. They can't move the ball either. I know that's the John Mateer thumb game, but this Auburn defense is a lot more talented and gifted than people want to give them credit for. I'm with you. I think it's a double-digit score. I just think Auburn just is going to be able to impose their will, and I think that Alex Golish is a lot better than people are giving him credit for, and I think they're going to do some very, very big things. So we'll find out.
Yeah.
All right. We have some super chats. Aaron Grisham may or may not be a producer for 24/7. Says, hey, fellas, longtime caller, first time listener. I bet my mortgage on Keelan Russell winning the job. Obviously, one shocker. What should I spend my winnings on? A producing team for Rufino and Joe Show.
Okay. buy yourself a Keelan Russell jersey. Buy yourself a Keelan Russell jersey.
That's true.
Good idea, Grish.
Oh. Take us back to that pizza place that you took. By the way, Grish took me to the pizza place in Nashville. Bomb.
I didn't get to get it. Oh, it's probably bomb. A 2 on the New York scale, so don't even.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
I'd still. What is the pizza place in New York? John's on Bleecker Street.
Yeah, but like that John's has kind of gone downhill. I got to be honest with you. John's on Bleecker is not the same way that it used to be. It used to be really good. I got to take you to a real pizza place next time and a real bagel place.
Yeah, bagels stink. 318 West says, let's freaking go. I'm assuming he's a massive LSU fan. Elks with a $2 super chat says, so Caden Curry back to Ohio State. Well, with all due respect, I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but here's the thing. Can I ask a dead honest question? Why isn't anybody freaking out over Cole Hudson returning to Texas?
That's my whole point. So to directly to Cade Curry though, Elks. Wait, you're a Colts fan. You know this. That the Colts edge room's not good. He's gonna make the team. He said the Colts. Arden Key is one of your starting edge rushers.
Hey, calm down.
He's gonna
calm down.
Arden Key's not good. I think that everybody knows that. Okay, Cade Curry is gonna make the Colts.
Nobody
so that's the difference here.
Football history is worth a damn.
Well, the last guy that we had that got drafted, Dynamic, is no longer in the NFL. He was shout out to Zay, who got drafted in the 5th round by the Texans. He did not die, only lasted a couple of years.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Speaking of Arden Key,
what are you looking at?
Oh, he's just got 30 plus sacks in the NFL. I guess he stinks. He's got 30 plus sacks in the NFL. Go look at it. I just looked at it.
How long has he been playing for?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you that. All right. Marshall with a $5 super chat says, I'm just here to say it's another season and Notre Dame still hasn't joined a conference.
And it's going to stay that way.
We didn't talk about this before we get out of here. What were your thoughts on Kurt Cignetti saying home, away, home because you haven't been in the conference? We didn't talk about this.
I like Sig, and it's pissing me off that he's like, he knows what he's doing. He's a rage baiter. He knows what he's doing. He knows that he has literally zero argument to make. Like he's got no He's just trying to piss everybody off. That's the truth. He knows what he's doing.
So he's Italian that knows how to push people's buttons, huh?
Right.
Sounds like my kind of guy. I don't really have any thought about it. I mean, can I tell you what I would have done if I were him? I wouldn't have said the conference. You know what I would have said? The Indiana Hoosiers have won more national titles in the last 30 years than Notre Dame. We're going to go home away home.
Yeah, the whole conference thing is he's trying to push buttons. That's the
Conference thing isn't the shot that you think it is. It's not the shot across the bow that you think it is. Joe, I'm asking you, what would Notre Dame fans have done if Kurt Signe goes, we have more natties in the last 30 years than you do? Yeah, you're going to do what we tell you to do. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with that, but he could have also come out and said, we did something that Notre Dame literally couldn't do a year before us. We actually won the thing. You got there and you couldn't win it.
I think that they just need to schedule the damn game and they both need to shut up. Just put it on the schedule.
Yeah, I don't completely disagree with you there. All right, Blake Ruffino, Joe Daly on the Ruffino and Joe Show. Subscribe down below. Do us a favor. Everyone that's watching right now, there's 1,701 of you in here. Go over to the YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button. We greatly appreciate it. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.